No one would have guessed that before we got into this. I mean, sorry, we did. We knew, but nobody else knew. We kind of gathered that drone delivery is all about high frequency perishable products, and there's nothing more high frequency than buying something from your coffee shop. Every adult in North America and Europe is going to the coffee shop every morning, so that's a no-brainer for us.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstead takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
Hey, welcome to Hangar X Studios podcast, where this is the leaders, the innovators, the investors, and the men and women shaping our industry today come to get the information, share their stories, talk about breakthroughs, talk about where capital is flowing in our industry, because right now we are in a period of transformation. And we invited Bobby Healy from Manna on today, because you know what? There's a lot of drone companies. They're chasing pilots. They're chasing press releases. But there's very few that are actually out doing real world work and doing it profitably in a way that I believe is going to change the industry. So, Bobby, we're going to have a great conversation. Welcome to the podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here. Delighted.
And you know what? One of the things that Manna, your company, has achieved is profitable unit economics when you're actually flying your missions. So everybody, we're going to be digging into what that looks like, how they achieved it, and how that is going to, I think, affect the industry. And you might be interested in following up with Bobby and the team there at Manna, because it's really exciting. And also, there are some really unique use cases between, let's say, suburban areas and urban areas. And there are some pluses and minuses to both of these missions. Some of us think of urban as the place where we got to go. It's going to be really accessible quickly. And, you know, that might not be the case. So we're going to explore that, too. And then also, if you've scaled operations in Europe, right, and we're here in the U.S., we have a global audience, but really want to talk about what are some of the things you did around regulatory things, infrastructure, airspace that you learned that are informing, you know, how you're doing business, but I think the rest of us can learn from. And also, it's really fascinating, the partnership you have with Uber and how that kind of accelerated some of your adoption curves and some really interesting things in there. So let me read your bio here, Bobby. It's awesome. Bobby's in Dublin, and my son went to college in Limerick, which is, what, hour and a half, 2 hours away?
Yeah, you can cross the whole country in 2 hours.
Fair. I love Ireland, one of my favorite countries. But Bobby, you're the founder and CEO of Manna. It's Europe's leading commercial drone delivery operator, and you found it in 2018. You're one of the only drone delivery businesses in the world reporting profitable unit economics per flight. And you've done hundreds of thousands of deliveries across Ireland and Europe. I mean, that's impressive. I don't think a lot of people, I didn't really understand it until I started researching you and the company, that what you guys have accomplished. It's really exciting. So before Manna, you scaled multiple tech companies, including Car Trawler. You built your career at the intersection of software, logistics, and aviation, moving goods quickly and efficiently with deliveries, often completed under 3 minutes in suburban environments. That's pretty impressive. So under your leadership, you've partnered with Uber, Deliveroo, and you're expanding across Europe. So let me start with this. You guys have been focused on doing this profitably versus kind of an experiment from the beginning. And what did you do differently to achieve that when I hear of and know of so many other companies that are struggling with just that aspect of drones?
Yeah. So first of all, the big surprise for everybody, I think, around drone delivery is it's actually quite boring. It's just logistics. The product is logistics. It's moving something quickly from A to B in a cost-effective manner safely. That is the product. It isn't autonomous driving. We're not catching rockets when they fall from space. It is incredibly straightforward. It is about autonomous flying robots reliably moving goods. That is what we've built. And If you think about what's it look like in 10 years when every single drone delivery company is competing, and how do you win? What differentiates you in terms of competitive dynamic? Well, actually, it's just going to be like low-cost airlines. It already is like low-cost airlines, and we model ourselves on low-cost airlines. In the end, consumers are not paying for drone delivery. They're paying for a hamburger or a burrito or the book they need or the charger or the medicine. They're not paying for or buying a drone delivery. So they don't care whether it's a really cool, space age looking aircraft or whether it looks like an elephant with flying wings and it gets the product there, because that's what they're consuming. So we set out to build something that could be regulated well by aviation regulators so that could be verifiably safe. And then looking past that, we said, what we're going to be scaling here is hundreds of millions, if not billions, of deliveries annually. And the way we're going to be able to do that is by having a very seamless operation that just works unattended almost. And our aircraft today will do 8 deliveries per hour. And so when you look at an airline, low-cost airline will talk about turnaround time. And that turnaround time is when the aircraft lands, the 737 or the A350 or whatever it is, how quickly is it back up in the air with more passengers? And our parallel to that is our turnaround time is when the drone lands, how quickly is it back in the air flying? And that for us is 25 seconds. So aircraft lands back in the air in 25 seconds to do a 6 to 8 minute flight. And so that means we get 8 deliveries per hour per aircraft. And that actually addresses the biggest constraint in the industry, which surprisingly is real estate. So again, if you're thinking about this, that you want to build SpaceX, you're not going to be thinking about the ugly, grimy fact that the roof of a McDonald's drive-through can take 10 aircraft, period. So that means if you want to hit the maximum throughput that that business needs off their roof, then you have to be able to do minimum 6 deliveries per hour per takeoff pad. So we made a very simple architectural decision, that really changed everything, which is we don't charge the battery in the aircraft. That sounds really trivial, but it means that we don't need to wait for the battery to cool down before we charge it up, and we don't need to wait to charge it up. The moment the aircraft lands, it gets a new cargo pod, which has the cargo and the battery all in one, and it's up in the air in 25 seconds. That feeds into how efficient our team are and our pilots, our remote pilots are. So one of our remote pilots can do about 100 deliveries per hour. And so when you think about cost and why are we profitable, it's because we think like a low-cost airline. We don't think like SpaceX or Tesla or Waymo. We think like Michael O'Leary, who runs Ryanair, doing 300 million passengers a year, a relentless focus on operational efficiency and unit economics. And the winner in this space, even though we're all going to do fine because it's a $1 trillion space, but you're not going to win if you're losing $50, $60, $70 a delivery, which some companies are doing. And that's great. VCs are willing to sponsor that for a little while. There's lots of venture capital companies will sponsor, burn to grow. But why do you need to burn when you can be profitable in this industry? So it's unusual space in that regard. And I think some companies are going to fail if they don't focus on unit economics pretty quickly.
Yeah, and when you said one pilot can do 100 deliveries, does that mean he's controlling what, 12 drones? Can you talk a little bit about the problem you had to solve and being able to having one person manage a fleet?
So one of our guys will manage 10 aircraft a day at a time. We'll change that where there'll be zero guys, but for now it's one guy managing 10 aircraft, which means that person can do about 80 deliveries per hour. We think if we had to have a remote pilot managing aircraft, probably the number settles about 30 to 40 aircraft have to be watching. But in any event, you become profitable after just 4 aircraft per person. So you start to get into positive contribution after 4. And one of our guys can manage, as they do now. We've an office in North Dublin, and a remote pilot can be managing 5 or 6 aircraft in Finland and 10 aircraft in Dublin, no problem. It's all virtual. The job is really just folding the arms. There's no actual piloting. There's no input that they have to do. They don't make any decisions. They're just really observing the airspace and making sure that if a ambulance helicopter comes through, military police, you name it, that we get out of the way and we ground. There's no real piloting role there, so it's pretty low cost.
Yeah, and you said earlier, Bobby, you're not really building a drone company, but it's a logistics company. And the market where you've gotten the most traction is really kind of that suburban area. Let's start and talk about what problem you solved and why that was a better environment than the urban environments we typically think of.
Well, two reasons. So first of all, the market is big. It's not like we're cutting off much. There's 92 million suburban homes in the United States with families in them. So it's a big market, just the United States. But there's two reasons we chose suburbs. The first one is I live in a suburb in Dublin, and there's about 45,000 people in my suburb, and it's next to impossible to get a reliable, fast, road-based delivery here because, in fairness to them, Uber Eats, Deliveroo, Just Eat that serve Ireland, they can't get enough drivers. And the demand density, so the number of houses that are in any given catchment area mapped onto the supply density, which is the number of restaurants in that area that can serve them, those two numbers just don't provide enough volume, enough deliveries to optimize a road-based delivery network the way you might be able to do in San Francisco or New York or somewhere like that. So you don't get to send your driver with three or four orders in a loop, doing batching, as they call it. That just doesn't work in suburbs because the density of delivery isn't there. So therefore, the existing aggregators, the big guys that are doing 6 billion deliveries a year, they can't really operate efficiently there. And so therefore, their margins are compressed and they're less likely to want to expand into suburban areas, thereby making it a poorer customer experience. And so you might be waiting half an hour to an hour at weekends to get your food. And even then, it'll be cold, it'll be a miserable experience, and no one's making money. Like McKinsey did a report where the consumer is paying 60% commission on basket value. So you're getting your pizza for $30, it's costing you $45. And even in that context, the restaurant's probably losing money in that delivery. The customer's not happy. The rider, the dasher, or the person driving the motorbike, not doing great either. And the aggregator, not doing great. So it's in a marketplace that's $300 billion, with, as I said, 6 billion deliveries a year, no one's doing great. In suburbs, we can fix that, right? Our autonomous flying robots, we have an NPS score of over 80 in the last 4 years of operation. That's a higher score than Apple have for customer satisfaction. We have profitable economics in point-to-point delivery, i.e. we fly out and we fly back and still make money. We don't need to optimize the network. And then the second part, I know that was a long-winded answer, but the second part of why is a physical one. So even if we wanted to deliver to you folks in your 50-story buildings in Manhattan, we couldn't because the physics of wind and vortexes and tall buildings, little tiny aircraft don't do very well beside very tall buildings. And so we have to stay away from tall buildings, and we need a flat area on which to deliver onto. So we need about a 2 yards wide circle flat that we can deliver onto that the consumer, that our customer can access. And so therefore, it's going to be suburbs, a high density suburbs, but suburbs nevertheless.
Yeah, that makes sense. And as you look at expanding across Europe, what have you found actually scales operationally versus what might have looked good in some of the pilot programs, and you realized, wow, that was some big lessons learned that is going to change the operational plan?
Honestly, we didn't change much from our original plan. A lot of folks would have said, and they wouldn't be wrong, but the numbers don't stack up as well. A lot of people would have said prescription medicine, that's the use case. People, it's a critical thing. That's a winner, right? That's what you should be doing with drone delivery. Hospital deliveries, that's a winner. That's what you should be doing. And there's been companies doing hospital deliveries forever. And all of those things are interesting. And I won't say we tried them. We did. We've done hospital deliveries. We still do. We do medicine deliveries. But they're like, if I talk about local pharmacy, for example, it's like less than one in 400 of our orders is pharmacy, but one in five of our orders is from the coffee shop. So when you think about,
you mean just the coffee,
hot coffee, with average 2.5 coffees per delivery, plus pastries, plus. So it's a family, or it's a home getting something from the coffee shop. So it's actually a very valuable product, but it drives one in five of our orders. So no one would have guessed that before we got into this. I mean, sorry, we did. We knew, but nobody else knew. We kind of gathered that drone delivery is all about high-frequency perishable products, and there's nothing more high-frequency than buying something from your coffee shop. Every adult in North America and Europe is going to the coffee shop every morning. So that's a no-brainer for us. The other surprise, I would say, there's obviously, we do a lot of takeaway foods. We do a lot of burritos. We do all the categories in the evening, a lot of pizzas, ice cream, donuts. Those are 12 hours of the day, all day long. The big surprise that we had was with grocery. And grocery, we're a contrarian there, because a lot of the other players in the industry are all in on grocery. You see the guys working with Walmart and so on. And we right. do grocery now, to be clear.
And
we
Walmart's
do grocery.
Kind of been struggling with that program.
Well, I don't know if they're struggling. They're certainly learning, and they're growing, and they're learning a lot. But what we've already learned, we've been doing grocery for 6 years now. And we'll always do grocery because it's a category that's relevant to the household. They're going to need it, at some point, but it doesn't drive volume. And if you don't have volume, you don't have utilization. And if you don't have utilization, you don't have profit. So it's a low-cost airline. A low-cost airline doesn't fly to remote airfields. And grocery is the remote airfield of drone delivery, right? So in numbers, that translates to the average spend on grocery for drone delivery is less than $10, right, per basket. Our average spend is about $30 to $40, depending on the category, outside of grocery. The other problem with grocery is it tends to be very high volume, i.e. the things you get from groceries have a lot of volume. And that doesn't suit drones very well, because drones by their nature are small objects, and the cargo needs to go inside them. So takeaway food, we designed our cargo bay for three Happy Meals, just fun fact, right? So volume is the hardest thing to solve for in drone delivery. But yet a roll of aluminum foil or six rolls of toilet roll won't fit in our drone. And that's intentional, right? Because there's no margin in toilet roll or aluminum foil for that matter. And only if you're willing to charge the consumer a big fee would you be able to make money selling aluminum foil, right? So grocery or the standard, 28,000 SKU supermarket, yes, it's useful, but only for a very narrow set of products, and only for occasional spend by consumers. Because once consumers or households go past the novelty of drone delivery and the excitement of it, then they just use it for whatever they need. And they don't tend to need aluminum foil that frequently, or little snacks that frequently. They'll have them in the house. What they need is perishable goods, and perishable goods, otherwise known as coffee, takeaway food,
ice cream.
Well,
yeah, let me ask you a question around that. As you're looking at designing this, you already talked about one pilot with multiple drones. So as you're designing your aircraft, was it really the operational considerations or the aircraft design that contributed the most to, I think, profitably flying these?
Yes, 100%. Our aircraft design went 100% into the distance, weight, and volume we needed to carry. And we modeled it on takeaway food, and literally modeling it on the actual meal sizes of most of the major brands and the weights as well.
What's the weight you can carry?
We carry, so we let the customers order, so it's 4 kilos, so it's like 8.5 pounds.
Okay, that's total? Yeah. It can carry 8.5 pounds?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's more than enough. The 95th percentile of our orders are less than 1.9 kilos, so that's less than 4 pounds.
Will you talk about some of the partnerships? Uber, was it Deliveroo, which we don't have here, but I'm guessing that's, like a Grubhub or... something like that, right? How did that come about? Were they excited to adopt, or did you have to do some selling there to get them to do a beta with you?
It's so easy to sell this thing when you see it. When you see it in real life, it's very evident that there's no future for road-based delivery. It's like, I know it's novel, I know it's cool, of course it is, but actually, when you come to our base, and we're doing 50 deliveries an hour out of one base, like we are really efficient. It goes from magic to, okay, why on earth would I use a 3-ton car with a human being in it to do this job when these little beautiful, quiet, safe devices can do it instead? So when you bring, as we did, one of the founders of DoorDash and the senior management team of Uber, the CEO of Just Eat, the CEO and founder of Deliveroo, it's very, very obvious to them, all of them, that this is going to be the way suburban delivery is going to happen. And as it turns out, I know the CEO of Uber from my past business, Derek Oshishawi, great guy. And I met him very early in the MANA journey and probably looked at me like I had two heads, like I was absolutely crazy. But he also knows me, so he knows I can run a business, so I'm probably not mad. And the same with Stanley Tang of DoorDash. He came to Dublin, saw it, and is, you know, instant believer. It's not hard to convince people that this will work once they see it. And, you know, to be clear, so DoorDash bought Deliveroo, so they now own Deliveroo. But there's, of the top companies, there's DoorDash, Uber Eats, there's Just Eat, and there's Delivery Hero. Those are the remaining ones in outside of China. And we've signed all of them, every single one of them. And those companies represent about 6 billion deliveries annually. And so I think that's testament to how real we are and how real drone delivery is going to be, that they're all working with us.
Now, how does it work practically? Does the drone go to the restaurant, or do groups of restaurants bring it to a staging area and then you fly to a staging area? Could you just walk us through the logistics of a day in the life?
Yeah, so we'll look at a new city first, and around that city we'll say, right, there's whatever, million people there, half a million people there, whatever it is. And then we'll say, right, where are the centers of supply? So where's the big supermarket? Where are the shopping malls, strip malls? Where are the high throughput vendors? You know, the vendors that'll do a couple hundred deliveries a day. And we'll actually put landing pads on the roof of those premises or in the car park, depending on whether or not they have space. We'll just put landing pads there. We won't put drones there. We're just landing pads. And then we'll have a central base in that city where we call it a depot. And that depot is where all the aircraft live overnight. And in the morning, they all fly out to their various different bases that they're going to work from in a mesh. So the whole city will be covered in a mesh of operational radii, where there's landing pads in the center of those radii, generally beside the restaurants or the strip malls. And then, like I said, they'll go out at 8 a.m. You know, they'll have had their nightly inspection at the depot, and then they'll fly around the city, depending on where the product is. They might fly 5 miles that way, get the product there, then fly to a customer and fly back to a nearer base. But they'll migrate all around the network within that city the whole day, the whole 12 hours of the day. And we operate 12 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they'll go to they'll do the shortest route they can. So they might fly 4 or 5 miles out to your house with your burrito and half a mile back to the nearest part of the mesh, so they don't have to do the deadhead flight all the time to be more efficient. And that's how it works. So we're right beside, we won't land further than 150 meters yards away from where the food is or the product is. And then we'll use ground-based automation. We'll use both runners, so people that'll go pick up the product at restaurants, or the restaurants will bring it to us. Or we use ground-based robots, now robotic dogs, that will pick the product up at the restaurant and bring it to the drone.
Well, I need to come over and see that. And, you know, I'm thinking, are there companies, let's say like Amazon or Google Wing, that are also trying to either get in this space or that you compete with? Because I'm thinking of them. They have a lot of capital.
We don't compete with them. I know the Amazon drone team very well. They're good friends, some of them. I know the Google team even better, also good friends, awesome team. I would say, in recognition, Google have right now the biggest and best drone delivery program in the world. They're in first place. I think we're in second place. And we cooperate very closely with each other. So as an industry, we don't refer to each other yet as competitors. I mean, we will compete at some point, but there's probably a couple of billion deliveries in the United States alone to go after that we can all share. We don't need to go head to head. And this won't be a game where there'll be a dominant player anywhere. It'll be a city by city based rollout for all of us. And within that city, it'll be a car park by car park or shopping mall by shopping mall rollout. So you could very well see ourselves, Amazon and Google all flying in the same city, flying within each other's airspace, you know, coordinating our systems together as we've already done, and picking up that highly fragmented supply and customer base. So we certainly don't see them as competitors. I think both Amazon and Google have done a super job of educating regulators around the world, educating governments around the world on what this is going to mean. And I think the industry wouldn't be where it is without Google and Amazon pushing as the frontier players in this. But I still think there's huge opportunity for companies like ourselves to make a significant dent in the market and become independently large ourselves by powering their competitors and powering direct brands as well. So I think there's room for everyone.
Well, yeah, and over there in Europe, the regulatory environment is much more, it enables this versus what we have here in the United States. So are there still some regulatory hurdles you're trying to overcome there in Europe? And then I'd like you to talk about what we need to do over here from your perspective, looking across the pond.
Well, you know, that statement that you just said was correct about 9 months ago, but now the United States is in the lead on the regulatory front. So I'll take you back in time. But yeah, what Europe loves to do is regulate things. And usually that means destroy them while it's regulating them. Like, we have no AI sovereignty here. All the AI companies are American. Our GDPR and our data privacy laws just make it incredibly difficult to innovate for small companies here. So Europe has done a poor job at fostering innovation because of over-regulation in certain sectors, unnecessary regulation. But in what we do in drone delivery and specifically aviation regulation, because we're regulated by aviation regulators, Europe did a fantastic job for the first 10 years and excelled and enabled MANA to be what it is. So we created a set of regulations, signed them into law in Europe in 2023 that put Europe in the driving seat, really. And it's what made us what we are. And it's worked really well. But up to now, it's only been regulations with not much plan by government to actually implement those regulations. And the problem with Europe is there's 31 different countries in the EU plus a few others that are in the EASA list, and you got to get each country has to do its own thing and has to put its own airspace management systems in there. It's got to implement the regulations, and that's slow, and it's starting to look typically European now, how slow everything is moving because it's so fragmented. Even though we've got a great set of regulations, we're not going as fast now as China or the United States. And then looking across the pond, because by the way, the bulk of our growth for 2026 is going to be in the United States. It's not going to be in Europe. And and what's happened there is the White House, the administration, has basically demanded drone sovereignty or drone dominance. I think it's what they call the strategy. But the United States realized because of Ukraine, I believe, that U.S. has fallen behind in manufacturing. China's taken a lead. U.S. has fallen behind in drone technology. Europe has demonstrated that in Ukraine. And I think so the administration has set a policy to regain dominance in this very important sector for military reasons, but also for just economic reasons. And so the White House issued a executive order about 9 months ago requiring the FAA to fast track the Part 108 regulations. These are the regulations that would permit drone delivery to happen at scale, and appointed a new FAA administrator, Brian Bedford, to drive that change forward. And what we've seen is a really rapid acceleration of the Part 108 regulatory timeline. And we're very encouraged by that. And we've also seen some really pragmatic steps taken by the FAA around Mode C Veil, which is a kind of a technical way to get flying quickly. And that's behind an absolutely dramatic change in fortune for US-based companies like Google, like Amazon, and others that have been allowed now suddenly to start throttling up. And you see Google announcing they're going to be in six different cities this year, and Amazon similar numbers, and ourselves, we're going to be in two US cities this year, all because of really pragmatic decisions by the FAA, spurred on by an administration that is not tolerating going slow in the space anymore. So, from my point of view, and from Manna's point of view, the big opportunity now in the world is actually the United States because of this regulatory path.
What cities are you coming to here, Bobby?
So, Texas, obviously, or states, I should say, Texas and Oklahoma are the two we'll be in this year. And
Okay.
we'll be doing about 2 million deliveries in by the end of this year in the United States mostly.
Well, we have an office in Dallas. We're going to build our second HangarX studio down there. So
Perfect.
if you're ever in town in Dallas, or anybody
Yeah.
listening, if you're ever in Denver or Dallas, reach out. Love to meet you in person. And
We've been flying in Texas in Pecan Square for since 2 years ago, actually. And
okay.
we've got it. Well, we haven't announced them yet, but we've got about four or five new locations in the Fort Worth area that we're going to go live this year. And
Okay.
similarly in Oklahoma, we'll be most likely start off in Tulsa and then Oklahoma City, but aiming to have about 150 aircraft operating between the two, and that translates to about 2 million deliveries annually for us.
Are those your aircraft? I didn't ask you that before. What are they? What's the airplane? Did you build it, manufacture it? Talk a little bit about how you solve that.
Yeah, we design and build our own aircraft. It's full. The entire stack is ours, right from, well, all the way up. It's our stack. So yeah, you got it. Like, there's nothing off the shelf that you can buy and just start doing drone delivery with, because it's such a heavily regulated industry. Safety and validation and performance of that safety are critical. And then the functionality is very unusual. To be able to deliver into tight spaces and deliver from up a height as well is kind of unusual use case for drones. So anyone that's serious about the space has invested in and has built their own aircraft and software, so airspace management software as well. It's a big stack. I mean, we've invested close to $100 million already in our development.
Okay. Put your kind of futurist hat on. 3 years from now, I know it's about, 8.5 pound payload now. But as this matures, right, the community, and you've overcome this before with noise complaints or safety concerns or just community going, we want these things flying around here. And let's just say that, we get past that. What are some of the use cases in addition to food, groceries, maybe some medicines where, this starts to also go, hey, there's an economically viable use case here. Maybe we're not there yet, but what are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there'll be heavier lift drones that will be used for medical. They'll be used for dual use, right? Combination of military and civilian. And I think blue light will be critical. So when I think about our aircraft today, it's super for blue light stuff. So bringing emergency medicine to locations, bringing, for example, we have a defibrillator service that we'll get a defibrillator anywhere in the city within 3 minutes. That's a really, really useful use case with the existing technology. And similarly, parcel delivery for us. So if you think about a metro or a large city, getting really high valuable parcels across that city today is next to impossible. Oh, to do in an affordable way. So drones will take that top critical part of goods movement away from the road and into the air in cities. And I think that's a very exciting use case. It's probably as a valuable use case as the suburban food delivery is. And again, with the same technology stack. And then you get into everything else. So what I like to think about is, look, in any given, community or city, there tends to be a lot of mom and pop restaurants, a lot of mom and pop producers, hardware, the local hardware store, the local bookstore. All of these businesses rely on footfall and rely on people coming to their real estate footprint in some way that know them or that they go because it's closest. And I think if you put a mesh on top of that, a logistics mesh, then you completely change everything, right? And it'll allow, for me, categories that probably aren't economically viable now, like local bakery shop of birthday cakes, right? That's a really difficult business to make work, right? But now with us, that birthday cake shop could be, you know, could reach 500,000 customers with less than a five minute flight. So it's not necessarily.
So instead of me driving 30 minutes across town to a bakery that has a great, you know, review on Google or Yelp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I can call them, and instead of driving there to pick it up, it can be zipped over to my house or somewhere, you know, real I can walk to that's near me. Yeah. And I have my cake and it's not all beat up.
But also the cable for your iPhone charger or your whatever, something you've missed, you don't have in the house. You really don't want to get in your car and drive to the local Apple shop or whatever, or the local hardware store. Like all of these things, like a drill bit that you don't happen to have on a Saturday to fix something. All of these things translate to micro Amazon. So what I mean by that is, instead of these gigantic fulfillment centers with 2 million products in them run by only one company, every business in the city can have logistics just as good as Amazon do. And the bookshop that we power today, like the local bookstore that we already power in Dublin, beats Amazon all day long with book delivery. Like you're getting your book in 12 minutes delivered into your back garden where we live.
Well, don't you think there's something, I think just to me, naturally appealing about that? I would much rather support,
of
you know,
course
Bob
you would.
And Mary's bookstore versus buying from Amazon if I knew I had the choice.
Of course. And there's nothing wrong with Amazon. Awesome product, awesome company. But everyone wants to support the local guy and they want to support local jobs. And like our butchers, like Gleason's Butchers in one of our areas that we serve, that's a butcher shop that was struggling to survive. And that butcher shop now is thriving because they now have an extra 250,000 customers within a 3 minute flight in Dublin. And that applies
totally to changes your marketing too, right?
Completely
market
changes
to them, say, I can get you a ribeye or a pot roast to your house in 15 minutes for dinner.
Fresh eggs with your steak, all that stuff. We've got Milk Manna, by the way, play on the name, but you get your milk is very popular in Ireland. I don't know if it is for y'all over there, but you get a pint of milk or a liter of milk delivered in 6 minutes to your back garden. You wake up in the morning, you want your cup of tea, whatever. These are all very appealing use cases. The local bakery, I mean, the bakery is just such a great product, the bakery, and most people, you know, are not willing to get in their car to go down to the baker to get fresh, you know, bread. What they will do is once a week or once every few days, they'll go down to the local big store and buy a load of bread or whatever. But our customers get hot bread straight out of the bakers. And so I think the small guy and the big guy can be served very well with drone delivery, but the consumer wins. The person that lives in a suburb gets anything they want in a few minutes in their back garden.
Well, you got to bring this to Denver soon.
But,
you know, let me maybe end on this. If I'm thinking of, you know, the global delivery system, you know, logistics, where, you know, this is the problem you're solving, right? What do you think's going to break first in a way that's going to really maybe drive people to demand drone delivery? I mean, you got labor, you have infrastructure, you have just the costs of the terrestrial delivery. Where's the driver there?
I think it's already breaking or broken. I mean, you see what's happened with the big delivery companies. They've all consolidated to get scale. And so there's only now in the USA, there's really two big companies, Uber Eats and DoorDash. You have Grubhub as well. There's not much else. And the same is happening in Europe. There's been consolidation. And all of that consolidation is about trying to drive down costs and potentially protecting margin. And that's now kind of reached a plateau. That's not going to improve any further. And what's happening in reverse of that is labor laws are changing and cost of labor is increasing. So we've seen in New York State, we've seen in a bunch of different states, labor laws changing where the gig economy worker is being recognized as an employee or being required to be recognized as an employee. And that's going to continue. It's just going to have to continue. And I think that's driving up the cost in Europe. The cost of making a road-based delivery in Europe now is about €7, about $8 roughly. Cost of making a road-based delivery in the United States is $9 to $10 per delivery. And that's going
what
up.
What would it be if that was a drone? Because I'm thinking, I'm not going to tip the drone. right?
No.
I might have a lower charge. What do you think? Instead of $9, what might it be?
Today, we're charging $2 and making money. Now, we charge a commission to our partners as well. But without a doubt, the way we're seeing costs going is the consumer won't pay anything for drone delivery. It'll be free. The cost at scale is so low. I mean, we do 75,000 flights with one aircraft, so we depreciate the aircraft over 75,000 flights. They're incredibly low-cost things to operate. So I'm pretty certain that drone delivery will be something that everyone gets for free, and it'll be paid for and subsidized by the vendors that are actually selling the products to consumers, and they will see it as a very low-cost logistics network for them to use.
Well, that's fantastic. So, you know, Bobby, as we wrap up, what final thoughts would you like to leave with everybody?
To everyone in the United States, you can look forward to almost certainty that if you're living in suburban USA, you will have regular drone delivery to your house within the next 5 years. And I would like to think that my company, Mana, will be that company providing it.
Well, you always have an open mic here as things develop. You hit big roadblocks, you know, especially as we pass 108 and you're looking here. Love to have you come back and give us an update on what's happening in Texas and Oklahoma. I know there's some other companies doing that too, but you know what? Rising tide lifts all boats. That's what we're here
Correct.
For. So
absolutely right. Absolutely right. Some great companies doing it, and proud to be one of them.
Yeah. All right, Mr. Healy, and maybe you'll have a pint one day in Dublin or Dallas.
Pints on me in Dublin, on you in Dallas.
You got a deal.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.